This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Center for Astrophysics. For the full show and archives, visit jodcast.net.
Hello, I'm Luke Hart, and joining me today is Kulal Mule, who is a postdoc or Hinsey Fellow at Oxford University, and he's also been working at Caltech, particularly interested in, I believe, radio transients and X-ray transients, amongst other things, lots of other things, I think.
Mainly expertise in radio frequencies. And, like, basically, transients emit in a wide range of frequencies.
So. Brilliant. So, just for the purposes of our listeners, could you explain sort of what a transient is?
So, the way I like to explain this is, in astronomy, anything to do with our cosmos, things tend to evolve on timescales of millions and billions of years. So, if you look at evolution of galaxies, if you look at formation of stars, but there are certain interesting events in our universe which evolve so rapidly on human timescales, in fact, anywhere between sub-second timescales to years timescales. And these are really transformational events in the history of our universe. So take, for example, a supernova, which is the death of a star, which is responsible for releasing so many heavy metals or heavy elements in our universe, and in a way it enriches the chemistry in our universe and ultimately helps in further evolution and eventually also things like the formation of biological stuff. So that's in short how one would explain a transient phenomenon, something which lasts for a short time, but the impact in the history of our universe that it makes is really big.
And could you sort of, in terms of your expertise, in terms of radio transients and X-ray transients, could you give us some examples of some sort of astrophysical object or event that would give rise to these, or what they are, essentially?
Right from objects that you find in our own galaxy, something small like our own sun gives off flares or coronal mass ejections, and a wide variety of phenomena that lasts anywhere between seconds to days or so. In fact, just these coronal mass ejections are so powerful that they can impact satellites that are orbiting the Earth also. So right just from taking a small star up to big scales, like what is going on in extremely massive stars, things like supernova give off different sort of transient radiation. And the big thing that I'm working on currently, which is a hot topic in astronomy, is the gravitational waves. So you would have either two extremely compact stars, so what happens at the end of a life of a massive star is that it leaves behind either a black hole or a neutron star. These are some of the most compact objects that we know of in our universe. And when you bring two such compact stars together, they inspiral and they merge, giving off gravitational waves. And along with that comes a lot of transient radiation across the electromagnetic spectrum. And my particular interest is in studying these phenomena or these transient objects with radio telescopes.
Mm. So on that subject, actually, we're talking about the gravitational waves and particularly the radiation signals that we see that come off those. I understand that a certain amount of time after the gravitational wave was emitted, shall we say, you get sort of signals in X-rays and radio, just as you said. So what sort of signals would you see in the X-ray coming from something like a neutron star merger?
That's right. So it's an interesting question and has been a field of research for over a few decades now. And these very interesting transient objects, transient events called short gamma ray bursts were discovered in the late 1960s. These are X-ray and gamma ray flashes seen in the sky and last for just maybe a couple of seconds or even less, and extremely energetic. And the idea that was built up over the past couple of decades or so on what these events might be was, one of the explanations was that they could be the merger of binary neutron stars. And these are very special kind of bursts in the sense that these are those rare events that are viewed at a particular angle with respect to the orbiting of the binary neutron star system that eventually merged to give you this gamma ray burst. And so these gamma ray bursts give off highly relativistic outflows called jets.
Oh, okay.
And these jets are very narrowly collimated, just like the jets that you would see in a jet engine, for example.
Mm.
So they are very high energy and highly collimated. So only when you're observing a particular neutron star merger along this axis of the jet will you find something like a short gamma ray burst. Now, what has been found with the recent discovery of this neutron star merger, famously referred to as GW170817 because it was discovered on the 17th of August just this year by LIGO and Virgo, the interesting part was that it was an off-axis event. So it was not like a typical gamma ray burst where you look on the jet axis, but it was slightly off-axis. And the radiation there expected is you would expect to find a very rich variety of nucleosynthesis going on with the neutron-rich stuff that is lying around. And that gives specific signatures in the optical and infrared wavelengths. And what you see in the X-rays and radio wavelengths mainly is the impact of this relativistic stuff that is moving out away from the merger region and impacting the surrounding medium. And you see a bright signal on timescales between days, weeks, or even years eventually. So when you're looking at an on-axis event along the jet,
mm-hmm.
you will see radiation that is evolving pretty rapidly, decaying on timescales of a week or so. But if you're viewing off-axis, you'll get a whole lot of different signatures in the electromagnetic spectrum evolving between timescales of days to years.
Okay. And so from the perspective of the sort of things that you look at and you research, was everything that you saw in that neutron star merger coming off in the X-ray bands and the radio wave bands, was that everything that you were expecting to see, or did you see any peculiarities, any sort of abnormalities that you hadn't accounted for when you were considering these simulations, if you will?
There are a lot of interesting things and a lot of unexpected things, of course, that have come out of this discovery. And so with any event, the first of its kind, there are a lot of things that astronomers learn out of it. And one of the things that was found was, in terms of a confirmation, if you will, of the simulations matching up with observations, was that neutron star mergers are indeed the sites of rich nucleosynthesis, where you form a high fraction of neutron-rich elements in the universe. So much more than half of all the neutron-rich elements heavier than iron have been in our universe have been forged in such mergers. That's something that came out of it, first observational signature. The other thing which was kind of expected as well as unexpected in a sense is through optical spectroscopy especially, is that just the speeds at which this neutron-rich material is traveling at about 10% or 30% that of the speed of light, which is pretty fast.
These are
mildly relativistic outflows. And the other thing that we learned was, because there were really faint gamma rays seen from this merger event, there are some hints that there was a jet, ultra-relativistic jet also. So we're talking of speeds very, very close to the speed of light here, very narrowly collimated. And of course, these are indirect signatures that we are trying to understand on how this off-axis event actually showed up in the gamma rays. But that was something really unexpected, that the luminosity of this particular gamma ray flash was extremely low if you compare with other gamma ray bursts that have been seen. So that's another sort of piece of the puzzle that still needs to be fit in the right place. There are a lot of theories and models out there to try and explain that. And maybe one thing that I can say is, for the first time we are seeing a definitive signature of really the interactions that are taking place between the jet and this mildly relativistic neutron-rich ejecta that is lying around in the form of something called the cocoon.
Mm.
So what happens is that the jet goes and slams into the neutron-rich debris that is lying behind from this merger. And that results in a massive shock. And sometimes the jet can in fact get choked because of that material. And
oh, wow.
There might be some signatures, some clues as to such a cocoon may be forming in this merger afterglow.
Wow. And has have people like sort of modelled this before, or is this something very sort of new thing with this event that we're
seeing? This is something that people have been, astronomers especially working on the theory side, have thought of this possibility. But in terms of looking at the data and trying to get empirical evidence, this is the first of its kind. And it's giving theorists a good chance to refine their models, if you will, and fine-tune their parameters to see how this cocoon actually arises and what parameters, physical parameters, might be involved in that happening.
Okay. So I think we're, you know, we're very lucky to have you here talking to us at the colloquium today. And you've already alluded to the sort of work that you do and the connection that that has with gravitational waves. Is there anything else that will sort of be featured in the colloquium that we sort of already haven't covered in this interview, or have you pretty much done it in a nutshell?
Well, one of the things that maybe we haven't covered is the future direction. So where this field of gravitational waves moving over the next few years? And I think it's especially exciting time for us as young astronomers to be in this field, because what we're having right now is the advanced LIGO and Virgo detectors undergoing upgrades, and they'll become much more sensitive by next year or a couple of years and start detecting many such events. And that'll really give us access to a whole new population of transient phenomena that we've just started uncovering. And I think that's going to be extremely exciting, a very highly impactful area of astronomy over the next several years.
So that's brilliant. When you look at sort of the gravitational wave events, particularly the one that you're referring to, the combined LIGO and Virgo event with all these electromagnetic sort of, you know, signals across the spectrum, one of the things that I think is really fantastic about that is that you have all these different telescopes all contributing to this one single event, adding their own little, you know, piece of the puzzle. Do you know, I mean, just for the benefit of myself being very ignorant and also anybody else at home who doesn't necessarily know about this, do you know of any other sort of collaborations in big telescopes that have sort of thought, ah, this is definitely the sort of thing that we want to get involved with now? Do you know of any others that are now going to start picking this up, adding to the puzzle, as it were?
Yeah, very much. The most exciting part of it is a lot of small optical telescopes around the globe are joining in.
Brilliant.
And I am in a process of getting together a coordinated network of radio telescopes all over the globe.
Oh, wow.
To try and get a organized effort in terms of understanding the radio afterglows from these mergers. So a lot of excitement is there in the community. Of course, you very well know that the Nobel Prize in Physics this year was awarded to gravitational waves. So also from that front, it's inspiring the younger generation to take up science, and especially the science of gravitational waves and the electromagnetic follow-up. Everyone is getting very much excited of this field, and I'm sure in the coming years there will be many more facilities all over the globe which will be joining in this massive global effort of follow-up of merger signals.
Fantastic. That sounds very exciting, I think. So just to sort of almost wind it down, we've heard a lot about the gravitational waves aspects and all the sort of different astrophysics that come off the back of this, and so the future of gravitational waves. What is the future of CUNAR? What's your plans? What are you going to be working on? What are you looking at thinking, oh, I'd love to get involved with that?
Yeah, it's a tricky question in some sense, because I'm at a stage where I'm transitioning from being a postdoc to maybe a permanent position as a professor at some place. I'm in the next month or two, I'm going to be moving to the US as a Jansky fellow, so another postdoc, after which I would really like to get a professorship at a university. But at that point, I would really want to develop my expertise on this aspect of electromagnetic follow-up of gravitational wave sources. And the exciting thing there is to try and understand about the physics of the merger and what is going on, in which environments are these mergers taking place, what kind of jets are launched with these mergers, what can we say about the neutron-rich material that keeps lying behind after the merger has taken place,
yeah.
and the rich astrochemistry, the rich physics that can come out of it. I think that's the most exciting bit where I would like to focus on.
Mm.
So over the next few years, there are a lot of things to do, and there's a lot of competition as well in this field, so I think I would like to be on top of that.
Brilliant. Okay, fantastic. Well, thank you very much for talking to us, Kunal. It's been brilliant, and I'm sure that the colloquium will be fantastic later, so thank you very much.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.